Want to call the Finance and Administration meeting to order, committee meeting to order. And before us is the agenda. Are there any questions, concerns? If hearing none, we will accept the agenda as published. Next is the approval of the minutes. I just noticed the very last item on page 3, item C, about the Smart Trip Cart change plan. I think it is incomplete. The discussion also asked for the comprehensive analysis. Item C on page 3 of the minutes, and asked to defer the change in the cost.
Yes.
And I think we need to correct the discussion of the minutes to reflect that. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. With that change, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Approved. The next action items, the first action item is a capital reprogramming of item A. Mm-hmm. And great. Carol, are you doing that one?
Yeah, I'm going to have Matt Brown do the reprogramming.
Good morning. This is a request that the committee and then the board approve a reprogramming action that would move funds, approximately $15.7 million in funds from a project for which the equipment will not be received until next fiscal year. That frees up dollars that can be used to begin work on the NTSB recommendations that are listed in the back of the proposal. The additional items are to create the projects, which is something that the board is required to do per the new reprogramming policy. It requests approval for the general manager to initiate and award contracts. Related to the NTSB recommendations, this is similar to the authority that the board granted the general manager for the RS stimulus program. It allows us to move more quickly in procurements. And finally, authorizes the increase in job order contracts to allow us to quickly begin some of this work. So those are the three items that we're requesting committee and board approval for. Oh, I apologize. New mics, I'm no problem. So the next, again, the funds were originally budgeted for an equipment, track maintenance equipment project, CIP 025. The budget was approved by the board. About $15.7 million are not needed in the current fiscal year. They will be needed in the next fiscal year. The annual work plan will be updated to include those funds. And so that amount can be reallocated, if approved by the committee and the board, to begin the NTSB recommendations. The next page is a list of all of the NTSB recommendations. We've noted the recommendation number next to the item, and in fact, in the proposed budget modification, we've also titled the names of the sub-projects to match back to the NTSB recommendations as a way for us to track progress. The items are listed here, the track circuits, wayside communication, cable insulation testing, loss of shunt tools. I think that the board and the committee are familiar with this list. And these are the items that we wish to begin funding in the current fiscal year. And finally, again, we're requesting board action to approve the reprogramming, authorize the creation of the projects, authorize the general manager to initiate and award contracts related to the NTSB recommendations, and finally, a contract modification to allow us to begin work. The NTSB recommendations. So this meets one of our major goals, putting our safety as priority, and I think it makes very clear that we're holding to our commitment to address the NTSB issues that were given to us earlier this year. Right, absolutely. In the spirit of the capital funding agreement and budgeting based on projected expenditures, when we knew a project was not, when we weren't going to have expenditures, we wanted to be able to make the highest and best use of those funds, and the NTSB projects are certainly a priority.
Okay. And there are no additional funds that are being reprogrammed in the 12 through 17 budget as a result of this item. This is simply moving the projects that were.
That's correct. There's a number of changes that are, I mean, we've gone back and looked at every single project, looked at the, worked with the project managers on their expenditure estimates. So there'll be a number of changes in the 12 through 17 program. This does not defer any projects. This simply rearranges the deck, if you will, to allow the projects that, this project that, that needs to move more quickly to take advantage of a project that is, will not be realized in the current fiscal year.
Are there any questions, Mr. Benjamin?
My presumption is that the authority that is being requested right now is for the projects that are identified in the resolution. In other words, we're talking about the general manager having the authority to initiate and award contracts. It isn't for any contract that in any way has anything to do with any of this. It's for a specific action that you're doing here. That is very carefully and properly worded in the resolution. Mm-hmm. And the projects are identified that are not very carefully and well worded in either that presentation or more significantly the GAIS. Mm-hmm. Would it be possible to adjust the GAIS to be very clear in the same way the resolution is, which projects we're talking about, and that the authority focuses on those projects, not any project?
Yeah, we can do that.
Absolutely.
That seems to be the intent that was clearly in the resolution, but the other materials are the same.
Any other questions? Mr. Downey.
Thank you. I very much support going forward with this. The NTSB recommendations are important safety investments, and the fortuitous availability of money in this year from a deferred project is a good way to get them started. But as I look at the resolution, and we've heard this before, this group of projects will be $262 million over a significant period of time. And what we're deferring this year to pay for it will come back. There's got to be something falling off the end of the earth in the out years. So we had a basically fully programmed six-year, $5 billion program. When do we see what goes away as a result of this?
There will be an annual work plan that is will be provided to the jurisdictions and the board on December 15th. We took an early look at that last month with a preliminary 12 through 17 CIP, and there were a few projects that were deferred, we indicated were deferred, one of which was the bus expansion program. The bus garage, let me be specific, the bus garage expansion program and some other minor expansion items. Right, the 75% 8-car train power upgrades.
So I know, it's very useful to be able to have the flexibility to meet the top priorities, but I want to be sure we always know what we've given up if that's what we're meeting.
Right, and we'll make that clear to the committee and the board in the annual work plan on December 15th.
Thank you.
Hearing none, is there a motion to move forward? Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. The next item is the replacement of the automatic train control track circuits and the work in the train control rooms. And this is another one of safety items and part of the overall requirement that we have to move forward. Ms. Kissel or Mr. Dupre? Okay, Mr. Kupchak.
Madam Chair, I'll be doing the presentation on this one. This is in regards for us to, again, moving forward on another NTSB recommendation. And what we want to do here is basically start the process of replacing all of the GRS version 2 track circuits throughout the entire railroad. What this approach is here is that we are going to focus on the red line first. So that way that would be the first line that we would be able to have 100% upgraded material. So that way we can restore the system back to an ATO mode of operation. And throughout this presentation, what we're trying to do here is, if you could go to the next page, is basically these 1,730 GRS track circuits located in 59 train control rooms, that's everything that's remaining on all of the alignments in total. So this approach here is to start the process, which will focus on the red and also provide us to have options in there so that a way we could exercise that to complete the remaining railroad. What this also does is keeps our options open to make sure that we've got competitive bids, because we are very sensitive that we don't want to just be locked into one vendor, you know, in the future moving forward with our train control efforts. And this right in here just kind of provides you some, you know, visualization of the impedance bond, the train control circuitry in the room. Next slide. And, again, as I outlined, you know, right now only in Sol Labrada and Alstom, you know, provide these units. We're in the review of Alstom's, you know, components and stuff on their Gen 4, and it hasn't been officially approved or accepted at this stage. So what we're going to do here is move forward with Insaldo because we do have them approved. And at this time, again, once we start this process, we're looking, you know, within about 13 months when we start getting the program fully going. And then this also gives Alstom a time to see if their equipment stuff, you know, passes certification. And I'd also say that we're also, the certification process is also required for Dulles. So we're working this in parallel. So it's not just about our existing infrastructure, but it's also the infrastructure that's being added to this railroad as well. Yes, yes.
So on that option or alternative supplier, well, you believe there are suppliers who are attempting to develop and will try to get certified?
Yes, there in the industry, you know, Alstom is trying to get their equipment, you know, certified, but we have been approached by a couple of other signal maintainer providers that have expressed, you know, some interest as well. So,
and are other transit properties users of the same type of equipment?
As far as the Gen 4?
Yeah, in other words, others who have to.
Yeah, there is.
So there's a larger market than
there. There is a larger market that's out there, and we're not only looking at a platform here stateside, but also internationally, mm-hmm. what's used abroad, because that's the other component is that we want to make sure that whatever product that we're selecting is not just solely, you know, in this region or, you know, within a certain area. We really would like to have a global support so that way it's sustained and supported for years to come.
Yeah, safety and performance has to be the first criteria, but competition and supplying it is also really important.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, so Alstom, you said, is very interested, is working on developing a module.
Yes, they have a module right now, but you know, again, based on its recommendations, we're going through a total review to make sure that it is certified, you know, for use. And they're also working on another product line outside of that in parallel.
And you said you had interest from other
yes.
companies as well, but no more than that, just.
We do have interest that, you know, the signal providers, you know, they look for large projects, and this is, you know, one if we have remaining track circuits that we know that we're going to be installing on four alignments, then there's interest on their part to go and work forward. But this action right now, like I said, we'll focus on the red first.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just out of curiosity, what is CIP Project 139 that this money is coming from?
There's a reallocation.
That's, I'm sorry, which one?
It's B.
That's the NTSB line item?
The one you just took action on.
Now, the NTSB line item has more than $5.6 million in it, right?
I'm sorry, I was flipping through.
I'm looking at your table there, and it says that there's $5.6 million. The NTSB line item, to the best of my knowledge, had more than 5.6 in it, right?
The total NTSB line item had 10.3 million in it,
yeah.
And the recent reprogramming added another 15. The 5.6 that's referenced here is for the subproject CIP 139-06, which with the reprogramming will have 5.6.
So what do we get when we get one of these tables? Are we looking at subprojects or are we looking at project? I'd like to be able to understand what it is we approve as we approve it. So do we go to the lowest possible level, or do we try and do it at a level that is higher so that we see the continuity? In other words, are all of those numbers always going to be the subproject number, and every time we get one of these, is it going to show it at the sub-project number, or is it going to show it at the project number level?
It's a good point. In the past, and for most of our projects, we focus on the project number. For NTSB, we wanted to track these in more detail, and so we've been providing the sub-project number. We could certainly provide both. I think that both are equally important to track. For this, we wanted to indicate that there were enough funds in the sub-project. To advance the
I think
the
in
work.
General for the board, keeping in mind that we're trying to do this on a broader policy level, it might be better so we know out of the overall project, how much is this using up and therefore how much is left in the project, how much has been spent before in that overall project and then how much is left, because this doesn't really tell me how much is left in the NTSB project.
May I just question, so I want to follow your question. If I go to page 16, is that not the chart that we should be following? That's the one that, where on 16 at the top it says the GRS track.
Yes.
Yes. It's, I beg your pardon?
That's a subproject.
That's
if I understand what we've done,
mm-hmm. that's,
or what the board will do when it adopts this, the previous resolution actually created the budget for this. The first line being that, and the important elements of the action we will be taking now are headcount increase and authority for sole source.
Right, and I guess what I'm looking for is a consistency in the way that we approach the financial approvals that we're doing. I like the fact that as we did the reprogramming, we understood what the individual sub-projects were. But in general, when we're approving something, the thing I'd be looking for is not, is there enough in this line item, but it's the broader question, Mr. Downey, that you talked about. What did we affect elsewhere? And therefore, how much money is left in the overall project, given whatever we're doing here, especially when we're creating a new project? So I'm trying to get a consistency in that process. Will that work for you guys? I would think it would. It should make it easier, actually. Okay. And the other question is, how many people have we now added in the capital program this year? It seems like every time we meet, we add a few more people. And I am presuming that the answer that we've received before, which is these people are hired for the length of the program so long as there are capital dollars, and we're not going to put them on the operating budget at some point because...
That's absolutely correct. I mean, yeah. Our capital budget is over $800 million. In order to effectuate that, we need people. We actually track that in our systems and our programs so that when the capital fundings is going away for that particular project, we do one of two things. We like to retain those people because obviously they have a skill set that we need on another project. Or if there's no availability there, then actually those folks are.
And I'm just curious about how many
and
I don't object to the whole concept that we need the people in order to do the project, right?
We have a resolution here that resolution 80. Is it 82?
82.
Yeah. So as of to date,
including this
action, it's an increase of 82.
82 in the capital.
That's in capital, not in.
That we above and beyond where we were in the original budget.
Right,
okay.
And a big part of that was the special police officers. How many was that? About 17 that the board had approved. But that was operating, but that would be.
Yeah, right.
We added like the last cycle, we added like 21, you know, track workers and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So all of these positions, and even in this one here, it talks about 12. These are individuals that are associated specifically, you know, with the project and stuff.
The large, the track walker escorts on neutral host that the board approved last month, that's in that number as well, which was a large number.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Following up on that, in addition to people we are adding for specific projects, are there a base number of people, including the overhead people, for the capital program who are charged to the capital program?
Yes. We do have a charge that goes across our capital programs, a direct rate, indirect rate.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed. Thank you. The next item is the financial reports for this period.
We have the monthly financial report, and I want to just overall on a year-to-date basis, we have the first quarter plus 4 months in. Our revenue is down due to factors that we're going to address here But our expenses are offsetting that. So primarily, actually, the expenses are being offset by energy benefits that we have in utilities and diesel and power, which is a good thing. But we've actually, in this monthly report, provided an initial preliminary analysis on fare impacts. And I know we promised the board to come back with a more significant analysis on that. We have that scheduled for February, because as you understand, I need to have more of a data set so that I can actually compare some of the assumptions that we've made. And I'll have Matt take you through a little bit of the analysis that we provided in the monthly report. But I will say this, that some of the all of the elasticity assumptions that we have provided in our budget for bus and rail ridership on a very preliminary basis, just in the 4 months data, are holding. And that being said, obviously we need a lot more other data set points to make sure that actually that's actually happening. There are other factors that are impacting this, and we've said it before, mainly the economy, but I want to have Matt give you a little bit more detail on those aspects of it.
Thanks. And again, as part of the FY11 fare increases, the fare policy principles that we discussed at the last meeting, the board has asked for a more comprehensive assessment. We will be providing that in the early part of the year, January or February, especially as part of the FY12 budget adoption process. What we've tried to present here is really an early look at what we think we're seeing. And it's really based on September data, because that was the first month in which the fare increase was fully implemented. Again, the work is underway. The information that we have here is preliminary, and we just wanted to give you an earlier look at what we're seeing. What we do know is that the unemployment rate nationally, and especially in the D.C. metro, and even more importantly within the District of Columbia, is still at a high rate. It's 6.2% regionally. Within the District of Columbia, it's just short of 10%. It's been over 10% for the 12 months from June to June. It's been significant, and we know that that the unemployment rate is the single best predictor of bus ridership, and so it makes sense that as the unemployment rate remains high, that we would still have pressures on bus ridership. And further, the unemployment rate, because we've been in the recession for so long, likely understates the number of persons who are out of work, who have just stopped working or no longer counted by the official unemployment results. So first on rail, which is a little bit more clear, the FY11 budget assumed a decrease of 7.5 million passengers as a result of the fare increase, or 3% of total riders. And it's very good news. We haven't seen a decrease in ridership. Year over year, in every single period, total monthly, average weekday, average Saturday, and average Sunday, year to date, we've seen increases across the board. We have not yet met our budget levels. We did budget a 2% increase. We haven't seen that yet, but we're still hopeful in this for the second half of the year. And we believe that the 2% is not being realized because of the slow economic recovery. Rail average fare, as we've been reporting to the board, is also slightly below the budgeted levels. There are a lot of things going on, and we're working with our system data to better assess that. It has in part to do with the gate issues that we experienced at the beginning of the year with the fare increase, where we counted passengers but didn't necessarily count fares, which would reduce the average fare. We've seen a very minor decrease in long and short trips. Again, these are minor decreases. We've also seen a very small increase in the periods after the peak fare, from 9:30 to 10 and 7 to 7:30. I just want to clarify, we haven't seen a shift of 3% to those periods. We've seen an increase within those 30-minute periods of 3%. So it's very slight. It's just a few thousand passengers.
Consistency there is that in the prior period, the change is not necessarily a decline in that period and that shift and that other increase.
Right. Overall AM peak, we haven't seen a increase or a decrease. It's been the same. We've just seen a very slight shift, a slight increase in the periods following the peak fare, 9:30 to 10 and 7 to 7:30. We've also seen a lot of customers switching to smart trip cards, which is something that we've encouraged, that would also decrease the average fare. An additional risk that we see out there and that we've talked about before is the possible reduction in federal transit benefits. Down to $120 a month. And we've made an early estimate that that could be between $5 and $10 million a year. Again, it would depend on the number of the types of trips. If commuters start taking vehicles into work, or if it's the short trips at lunch that are affected. So there's some wide variation, and it's hard to quantify the actual loss there. And then on bus, again, the single best predictor of bus ridership is the DCM unemployment rate, which right now is just under 10%. It's high historically, especially over the last several years. We've seen a decrease in bus ridership for the last several years. FY10 ridership was less than we anticipated. In fact, every single month in FY10, it was lower than the previous fiscal year. In September, we indicated that there were four factors that we thought were impacting bus ridership. Those were the current economic climate, on-time performance for bus, recent fare increases, and the reduction in the transfer period. Again, it's hard to tease out which of those variables has the greatest impact, but the unemployment rate, I think, is one that is one of the most significant. In fact, in FY10, bus ridership was lower than FY9 by just short of 8%. It was lower than FY08 by 8%, so it's a very low ridership year.
On that point, you've emphasized DC's unemployment rate and the ridership decline. Have you looked at the numbers across the region, broken down by region, to also arrive at that same conclusion? What is it saying in other areas where our services?
We've looked at it two different ways. One is the econometric model that we work with planning on, and according to that model, it's the DC unemployment rate that has the greatest impact. We have taken a look at ridership in all sectors. The bus has divided the riders in the lines into various segments. And it's interesting because across the board we see decreases. It's not decreases just in the district or just in a certain part of the right, and that's right. We've started to look at other regional routes, and there are a few outliers. I mean, the circulator bus has experienced increases, but I know that there have been decreases. I think Fairfax Connector has had decreases, and there have been decreases in some of the regional routes. And we tried to put that information in the monthly report, so it's not just something that we're saying.
I think the economic piece is what we really want to make sure that we're pointing to and is consistent with the economic piece.
Right.
I want to try and repeat some of the stuff you said just so that I make sure that I understand what it is we've concluded in this process. First of all, when we raise fares, there's always some expectation that we will lose some passengers because that's what research has shown over all the years that everybody in the world has raised fares. And often that is offset by natural growth in ridership to some degree, or actually, you might have growth in spite of a fare increase. In the past, our experience on rail has been that we've had little or no loss in ridership as we increased fares. And this time, we had a really whopping fare increase. And what I thought I heard you say is there was little or no loss of ridership, and therefore, either the natural growth matched the loss, or we had little or no natural growth and little or no loss associated with the fare increase. But basically, we have no indication on rail that people went away in droves because of the fare increase.
That's correct.
On bus, what I thought I heard you say was we had projected the possibility of a small increase in ridership, and we also projected the possibility of a reduction due to the fare increase. And what we have seen, and this is the thing that you can't predict any better than most economists throughout the world, is that the economy has been driving down our bus ridership, and that continues to be the primary effect that's going on, as opposed to necessarily fare increases. And that what we're looking at primarily in that case is, if I don't have a job to go to, I probably don't take the bus to go to that job.
That's exactly right. The elasticity, as I said earlier, the elasticity in bus is more sensitive. And we actually had, I think we assumed a 6% loss in riders due to the price increase that we had this year. And just on the very preliminary analysis, as Matt has discussed, that conservative estimate is holding. But what is happening is the point that we're making, which is the economy, which we had not predicted. We had predicted at least a slow recovery that would be happening this year, is not happening. And as a result, we are losing, you know, those riders. So what
we're really seeing is a situation in which it does not appear that the fare increase had any substantial effect in either bus or rail, but the economy is having an effect throughout, so we're not getting rail growth that we would have hoped and that we've had through the rest of our years because of the economy, and we are getting actual losses in bus, apparently, due to the economy.
Yeah.
And then when we put all of that together, in spite of all of that happening, our budget is balanced.
Well, you know, as you saw, the budget 4 months in, we have less than $1 million, subsidy negative, which is, to some extent, I would consider as balanced because we could contain it.
Right.
We do have some pressures that are happening on our budget, certainly revenue pressures that we have to try to figure out how to contain, and we will do that as we move along. But you're absolutely right. The economy has trumped the fare increase, really, as we look at it. And that's what we're trying to determine, how we can put plans in place to mitigate that, so anticipating that if it doesn't get worse, and that's what we'll be providing. The analysis we provide in January will give us a better look on what that revenue loss is. And as we provide you the budget for FY12 in January, I have been silent on revenue. I've given you the cost picture, the $89 million gap, but we've been silent on revenue because we're trying to determine if we should be flat, no growth, and specifically in the bus, or we should actually have other assumptions.
At which point you have the same challenge that economists around the world currently have, which is, what will the economy do a year and a half from now?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And even, I apologize.
Yeah, in terms of the potential revenue loss from removal of the federal subsidy, if that happens, and one hopes it doesn't happen, it will only have about a half-year effect this year. Is that correct?
Half year.
Yeah.
And then we anticipate, you know, the estimates that we made were very conservative. People's behavior takes a while to change.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm anticipating it might even be less than 6 months. It may take them a month or two to determine whether or not it's in their best interest to find another means of transportation versus the metro.
But the need by employees and employers to take account of this change means they may have to make decisions this month.
That's correct.
Yeah. Employees have to say in mid-December, what should they do in January? And I did see one of the major providers of the service is saying, we'll continue to allow you to deduct from your pay the amount for the higher benefit, but only the 120 would be the tax-free, but they would still take out enough to pay for their fare. Hopefully that would lock people into continuing to ride.
And just two additional points, Mr. Benjamin, that confirm the things that we've been talking about. We're the early part of this analysis, but we're kind of looking at the data in many different ways. We looked at the month immediately preceding the fare increase, so June to June. Before the 25% fare increase, there was a decrease year over year. We looked at the month of November, even prior to the 10-cent surcharge, year over year, there's a decrease. Those aren't related to the fare increase. That's clearly related to the economy, or other factors. So that just emphasizes the points that we've been making. And again, as we prepare the FY12 budget in January and February, we'll be coming back to the board with revised ridership forecasts, revenue forecasts, and a more comprehensive assessment of what we think has happened with the fare increase, the switch from paper cards to smart trip, the switch on the buses from cash to smart trip, and hopefully some savings that we'll realize in the FY12 budget as a result of the greater use of smart trip cards. Thanks.
On the bus side, are decreases in ridership in this small amount sufficient to find some opportunities to adjust service, or is it just fewer people going to be riding the same buses?
Yeah, we'll get back to you. I mean, there is a policy, a criteria, it's a board-approved criteria that determines if it's a rating on bus bus routes, and we'll come back to the board in January with recommendations given what's happening in that ridership.
I mean, the downside of that is we don't want to get into a spiral where we raise fares, lose riders, cut service, lose more riders,
right,
et cetera.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, that's spiral. And spiral is the reason that we're currently running the bus system, because the private operators did that and went bankrupt, and Congress told us to do the buses.
That's, yeah. I think our customers tell us that. We know it. Okay. Is there anything else? Okay. Any other questions? Well, I think this is really a good point for us to look at this, and I think the one back in February is going to be very critical in terms of what the revenue issue is for us. Well, we'll see the budget. I think the real part is where the revenue piece is going to go in terms of that.
Actually, I apologize. We did not talk about capital, but I can make a 1 minute. It's in the monthly performance report. We've actually obligated over half of our capital programs, which actually is a very, very good thing, over 56%, I believe, 55%. And the expenditures are only 11.5%, but only due to the fact that we actually moved a milestone payment that would have been made under the train set 7000 series car, which is a significant payment, 10% of our capital budget, into December. So it missed the first quarter. Otherwise, we would have been in the range of a 20% spending on the first quarter or first 4 months, and I just wanted to point that out to you. We will be coming back. Our PMO, Parsons Brinkerhoff, will be coming back in January to the FA committee, providing you with a look on our annual work plan and discussing some of their oversight responsibilities in a more detailed fashion for the board in January.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I wanted to compliment you on that, by the way. And I think we are in a situation where our control and management of the rate of obligation and expenditure and understanding what we're doing has gone up rather dramatically over a couple of years ago. I also noticed that you are starting the process that is called for in our capital agreement to look at what the jurisdictional contributions need to be on the expenditures, and I'm very pleased that you're making those adjustments and looking forward to seeing how that all works out. You're doing it very well. Thank you.
I would just add a ditto to that. Those were my comments, essentially, as well. So I too would like to commend you on that. That's a real success.
And I will say
that improvement.
It's a team effort. Dave Gubacek and myself have done a lot of work with our staffs to do this. So kudos are going all around, I would say, to Dave as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any other questions on the financial reviews? If none, I guess I just call your attention to the calendar part, but moving forward in the next year on the issues, and I think the significant part is the budget presentation that is very critical and the work that you are doing toward that presentation for us next month. And I think often we want the budget as soon as possible. January's sometimes a little late for some parts of us, but I think it's very critical that we get that information and we start the process for the FY12. Thank you very much. Are there any other business to come before the Finance Committee at this time? Hearing none, and we are adjourned.